Former swimmers looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City? Reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn-to-swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vent. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming.
Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dry land program? Swimstrong Dryland is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dry land programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
Yeah, good question. I didn't think we'd get up, but I needed the fight to be more. All right, so 2008, and you felt the pressure. You felt the offensive juggernaut of Katie. Now I wanted her to feel, all right, you've got a bit of fight in you. You've got some fight there. Because if you want to have the dream of 2020, you're going to have to make a slight move here. You can't feel like you've been stationary or gone backwards. Katie was sick. There's no question about it. You don't come back in 31. Katie doesn't come back in 31. Like, Katie came back in 29-1 at the Olympics. There's a 2 and a bit seconds gap. I understand that. Like we just happened to be there, and Arnie being Arnie was competitive. She's a beast, and she was there, and she felt the pressure of 2018. But I'm going to tell you a story about 2019. What no one understands is about the mindset. So we had two standards with Arnie, and it was outstanding or dog poo. And seriously, it was outstanding or dog poo. So if she was really good in training, I said dog poo. I said dog poo, Arnie. It's dog poo. She needed to understand failure was actually acceptable because it's going to build you. Like, it's not, Dean's created the set and I've failed and I'm terrible. No, I will create the hardest possible sessions because you want to win. I'll create that. So we had outstanding and dog poo. Anyway, I really liked the way that she swam at trials in 2019. She was out faster. She set herself up nicely, but she didn't. She just sort of collapsed a little bit the last 100. Roles reversed. 2019 World Championships, her last 100 was phenomenal. And so she got out of the water, and her splits weren't right where I needed them to be, and I didn't think that it was her greatest race. I thought trials was better. And I didn't want her to think that she had made it because our dream was Tokyo. And I thought that, hang on a second, I've got a moment here. I've got a real big moment. If she thinks she's made it, we're in trouble. Katie will rip up. She won't sustain the next year. She'll get too social. She'll get complacent. And I don't need that. So what I did was I saw her, congratulated her, gave her a hug, blah, 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 went through the splits. And then just this juggernaut of media and praise came towards Arnie, and she had to go and do this press conference. And I had a couple other swimmers to go and swim and warm up and blah, blah, blah. And I came back around and they all finished. I said, where's Arnie? And they go, she's at the press conference. I said, where is it? And they said, all right, I'll take you to the back of the pool, through there, through this corridor. I've gone through and I said, get me to the back. And I've walked in at the back and there's cameras and Arnie's sitting there by herself being interviewed. And I came in right behind the back of the camera. And Arnie saw me and she just glowed. Like, looked at me and I just uttered, dog shit, dog shit, dog shit. And she looked at me and she just nodded. She went, like, I understand what you're doing. I understand it. And that was a moment.
How though? Like, listen, mate, there are many, I mean, almost everybody that I can think of would say to themselves at that stage, He's too much. Like, it's too much. Like, I can't.
No, it's not too much. It's not too much. Not when you have this relationship with someone that you basically, as you said, like a contract. She said, so I ain't being an asshole. I'm not being a bastard. I'm not trying to outdo another coach, or I'm trying to get the best from the person that I know that their character to be. I can't do that with a Mitch. I can't do that yet with an Elijah. I can't do that yet with a Molly. You've got to understand who they are. Like,
right. So it's individualized. You knew that she could.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, right. Arnie and I will have this bond forever because, you know, like, I'm on a break now and I haven't heard anything from my athletes except Arnie every day. She FaceTimes me. She calls me. She texts me. She wants to talk. She basically says to people, and I've heard on interviews, she says, I'm so happy I don't have Coach Dean at the moment and I've got my friend Dean. And that's an honor, mate, because the Coach Dean is holding her accountable to her dream. Me, the friend, is I don't talk about swimming now. We're laughing and giggling and what she's doing and what photo shoot she's doing and what stories are happening with the family. And that's the relationship. And I want this relationship with all my athletes. But they don't want to give me, some of them don't want to give me that much. And I understand it. And it's hard.
Right.
But I want that. I'm a people's person. I want to get involved in Mitch's life. I want to get involved in a Brett Hawke's life.
Mm.
I want to know everyone. I want to be your friend, but I understand the difference. I understand it. I'm not the one going, I can't be the friend. I have to be the coach. I know exactly what is needed, but let me in. Let me in.
And you're right. Listen, it's. I've coached many people over many years, and it's a special person that you're talking about, Arnie. I mean, that's a special person, you know, not just in the athletic sense, but in the mentality. You can't treat everybody like that. There's no way.
There's no way. And also, people don't understand. They look at it and they go, oh, Dean's just so hard. It's not hard. It's my relationship with Arnie, and I've never once gone over the line, never once. And that is because I'm professional in my pursuit, and that's the deal that we had. I sat with her and we spoke about it. If she said to me, Dean, as I said to you before, I'd love to go to the Olympics. I would love to make Olympic final. Okay, rightio. I don't have to push that hard. But you want to go and fight the giant? You want to pick up a sword and go against Goliath? Well, don't you bloody push me. Don't you tell me I've got to go and fight it. Can you be ready? Can you be bloody ready?
That's the difference, isn't it? That's the difference. And I've got athletes like that. I've got athletes that are happy to be at the Olympics.
Yeah.
I have athletes. But there's a difference between the Ariane Titmus and the Bruno Fratuses and then everybody else. There's differences. They have a different standard, mate.
That's exactly right. Like, I knew that Katie had better turns than Arnie. I've got all the data. Honey, what are you going to do about it? Tell me what you're going to do about it, because this is terrible. This is terrible. You're getting smashed. What are you going to do about it, Arnie? Tell me what you're going to do about it. Oh, Dean, I'm going to do this. Oh, really? Are you? Okay. Well, why aren't you doing your turns at the end of session? Oh, well, why aren't you? Tell me why aren't you? Tell me why aren't you? You're telling me you want this. You want this.
Right.
Or is it just me? Is this just me?
Right.
No. So when Arnie takes it on her own volition and I see her doing the extra turns, I go across to her and then I'm there with her. And I'm not talking to her like, Arnie, I'm talking to her like, all right, good. Now move off here. A little more push. You're too long on the wall. All right. You're more than 45 degrees. All right. Delay your first kick. It's that.
Mate, that's coaching. And that's special. And look, you've definitely got it. You've definitely got a gift for this.
Well, not really, Brett, because I'm sitting here and people give me accolades for Arnie and Molly and Meg. Yeah, but well, I failed Mitch. I failed Elijah. I don't think I failed Abby. Abby was really good. I was really impressed with Abby, but she waited day five until she swam the 200 breaststroke. And she did a really good swim. She just needed another swim. But Mitch and Elijah, I just didn't get the best out of them. And I failed them. You know, I know that they didn't perform to what they wanted to perform, but it's a partnership. And I need to somehow, I think Elijah's a lot closer to me, and I've got to get Mitch to want to be my best mate.
Yeah, Elijah went in. Did he go into the Olympics as number one in the world?
Yeah, number one, mate.
Number one in the world, and didn't make the final in the 400.
No, he made the final. He made the final of 200.
Okay, right. So Where did you fail him then? Like, what's your failure?
No, my failure is that I didn't succeed in that moment with him. Like, I don't think there's going to be a failure in the future, because you're going to learn from it. It's a reflecting point, and you need to have those moments. But that's the biggest moment for him. And we didn't succeed there together. And, he understands it. We've learned from it. He handled the pressure great. It was just that he really, really wanted it, to the point where, it was just tense. And he's a beautiful boy, mate. He trained unbelievable. He did things unbelievably well in the pool. I thought that he needed to do things better prior, the pre-stuff in the pool, which I've spoken to him about, and hopefully he's listening. But, he was cooking. He was doing amazing stuff. It just the want,
Right, the want. And I've been there, mate. Like, I've been in Olympic finals myself, and know that the want, you can press too hard. You can grab too hard sometimes. And that's tense.
He was tense and his head was lifting. I could just feel it. And I couldn't subdue it. And people look at me going, Dan, you're too tense anyway. But I wasn't in that moment. I can be very calm. You can be articulate. You can hold your manner in a different way. You can press when you need to be. You can be funny. You can be jovial, whatever you need to be. I'll give you an example. I always believed, it's my first Olympics. I always thought when I get to that mountain, the job's done, which it is. Everything's done in training. As I said to you, when I was younger, I wasn't smart. I wanted to train like I was racing and understood everything. So in training, it is done. So Arnie for us was the 400 freestyle. He'd done. That is when I'm going to put pressure on you, getting your game plan right, and then we're just going to add salt and pepper, chili, spice, and just go for it in the final. But you're going to do that same game plan. So I always thought that when I walk her down on the Marshalling Era, or walk anybody down the Marshalling Era who is in the same tune as me, that I would not talk about the race, just talk about what an honor, here we are, and tell a joke. And that's what I did. We didn't talk about the race.
I was going to say that because that's the wrong view. There we go. That's a better view. One of the things that is obviously of interest to me is that those final moments, But, it's incredible. There was a massive amount of buildup for this 400 free, and it was the first battle. And I did a live commentary and you doubted.
I did.
But I don't know her. I don't know you, and I don't know her. I'm looking at it from the outside in. I don't know the inside out. I haven't seen the mileage. And this is why it's so easy for people to be critical, because they don't see the work that you're putting in. They don't see the hours. They don't see the sets. All they see is this final product of the performance and the celebration. It's easy to make a comment about those things. And it was easy for me, She's getting beat at the 200. She's given too much to Ledecky. This is the greatest female swimmer in history. She's given too much room. And yet what you've said to her, and what you've said on the back end of this, and what she said on the back end of this, is she stuck to the plan. So this is amazing to me. The plan was to give Ledecky the room she was going to have, and then to back end this thing. I mean, this is an incredible game plan to say that you're going to back end Caitlin, you're going to swim over the top of the greatest athlete in history. How do you come up with a plan like this?
Well, it's the evolution of the athlete. So I saw Arnie, the 800 freestyle at Guangzhou is the genesis of back end in that race.
Mm.
So she went, what was it? 4.7, 4.7, I believe, at Guangzhou for an 800. That's not the way that Arnie swims. That's not her. But that showed me that all the work was coming to fruition. Things had changed and shift. The blocks have moved. And, okay, just hold that question, because there is a story that links to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jacko,
right,
who for me is the greatest. Bowley and Jacko. I just love him. Jacko could have easily not put me on that team, mate. But like people, I don't know why people either like me or don't like me, because they go, oh, Dean's out of the box. He's a rogue.
Right.
So Jacko saw something in me, and he put me on the team in 2.16 short course. And then he had a choice to put me on 2.17. And anyway, 2.17, Arnie at trials, went out in 2 minutes and came back in 2.04, and she went 4.04. She went 8.23 in the 800. And Jacko came up to me, and I had heaps of people, mate. Like, no one was in contact with me prior. No one. But everyone now telling me what to do. Mm. But me being dogged, I didn't listen. Telling me what to do and blah, 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 blah. And Jacko come up to me, which I have a lot of respect for. He came up to me and goes, Dean, it's not making sense, your tactic. Her best is 158.1. She's going out in 2:02, and she's come back in 2:04. The best athletes in the world are negative splitting or even splitting. Mm. And then I had another Doug Frost come up to me, and he was telling me, oh, a stroke, and she's not back-ending and all this. And then I had someone else come up to me, right? And I disregarded them, but it was Jacko. And I was going, and I went home and I told my wife, and I was going, why can't people just back me? Like, I'm here every day on the front line trying to push this, and I'm dreaming for this girl. Why aren't they? And I could have easily gone, I'm making a mistake here, but I didn't. Jacko came on the pool deck a week later on Monday, and he walked up with me, and he was talking and blah, blah, blah. And I said, Jacko, can I talk to you for a second? He said, yeah, sure. I said, Jacko, you said to me that she's swimming it wrong. She's going down 2 minutes to in 2:04. And I said, what do you want her to do? Do you just want her to make the Olympics or the Olympic final? Or do we dream for this girl to try and win this Olympics or actually try and challenge Katie, which is a dream? Katie's going out in 157.1. This girl's going in 2 minutes. So if you wanted to go out in 2:02, come back in 2:02, she's going to be around about 8 seconds off. Or do I bloody will go for this? And he looked at me in his leadership right there. If I had a Don Talbot, a Doug Frost, I would have said, no, listen to me. Listen to me. You're not doing that. But he went, I've got your back. Go for it. And when she won in 2:19, he came up to me and he embraced me. He looked me in the eyes and he said, thank you. And that is a moment, mate.
Wow. Wow.
That's a moment. Like you can't kill the dream unless Arnie says she wants to make an Olympic final. Then, okay, yeah, no problem. Let's change the game.
Jacko's a good man, isn't he?
He's a great man, mate. And another story there for you, Ricardo. Yep. And I'm sorry if I'm talking too much, Brett, but I'm enjoying this. is that 2018 Pan Pacs were in a place called Nagawaka, right? So I'll try and paint the picture for the audience. The Australian team goes to this town, and the whole town gets behind the Australian Dolphins. There's signs, billboards. There's people on the street waving with Australian flags. It's amazing, right, to have come to this place called Nagawaka. And anyway, part of the deal was the council takes us out, and then we take all the coaches of that region to do like a workshop. And the way that the Japanese structured it was that they'll be in the traditional classroom, which is like horizontal, like one, two, three rows. And then us on the Australian team would be in front of them in a horseshoe shape, right? Mm-hmm. I'm right next to the Japanese coaches. So Jacko gets up and he introduces the coaches and he goes, "This is Craig Jackson. He is an Olympic gold medalist coach for Mac Horton." And they all stand up, the Japanese, and go, "Oh, great. Oh." And they go, "This is Simon Cusack. He is Chris Springer, silver medalist, Kate Campbell, Bronte Campbell, world record holders. Oh." And then they go, "This is Peter Bishop, Olympic champion coach, Kyle Chalmers. Oh." And then he goes, "And this is Dean Boxall." And I stand up and he goes, "He's done nothing yet." And I was just like, "Man." And I sit back down. I'm like, thank you. And I said that. And Bowley was pissing himself. They're all laughing and giggling. And I was like, and Bowley's gone, "Oh, brilliant. You stirred the pot." And I was like,
brilliant.
Like, when Arnie won, I text Jacko and I said, "You owe me a plane trip to Nagawoka and you're going to get me in front of those coaches and tell me I've done something." And he said, "Yes."
Oh, I love that stuff, mate. I love that stuff.
That's he's
stuff
the best, mate.
He knew.
He just knows how to pull and prod and poke.
Exactly. Like, great leader, right
moment.
There.
It was a good moment.
That's a good leader right there, mate.
Absolutely.
Oh, mate. It must have been tough then to see him go, but Rowan's come in and done a fantastic job, mate.
Absolutely. Like, what people have got to realise with Rowan is he's incredibly passionate for Australia. He's incredibly competitive, and he's an exquisite coach to detail. He was the head coach of Nuttawonin, which is the number one club, was the number one club in Australia. He was the head of that. So what he's done is he's brought that sort of philosophy and put it into the Australian team. We're a club. You know, that club mentality. We're coming together. We've got each other's back. We're supporting one another. We're about relays and so forth. And he's just great. You know, like, I could call up Rowan and have a conversation, one, about NBA, two, about Arnie, Mitch, Abby. I could call up about, you know, "Oh, God, what's the price of bread in China?" And he could talk to me. It's not just about swimming. Like, he's a really good bloke. He bleeds. He bleeds for us. He's on the front line. He understands it. You know, he's followed on from what Jacko, and he's got the most respect for Jacko, what he has put in place, you know, the culture, the systems, the protocols, and the belief.
Yeah. I'm so glad they re-signed him to Paris. I think it's essential. I think the next thing that's essential is that your pay increases. I mean, that you're underpaid, mate. You are underpaid. We've got to get a system where you're valued for how good you are. Because listen, mate, you're extraordinary. And then there are others that, you know, you've got your Michael Bowles, who are doing extraordinary things. But
he's extraordinary.
Coaches that just need to be paid more. I mean, the American coaches are making a lot of money, mate. I mean, we're talking $400,000-$500,000 US. I mean, it's big money. So I'm hoping now with Brisbane coming in that you're going to be one of the top coaches paid in Australia. I'm hoping that this can be figured out somehow. This is something that I'm very passionate about, that I want to get you paid. I mean, there's no way that you should not be one of the top paid coaches in the world, along with, you know, a couple of the other Aussie coaches that are doing it, because I mean, you guys had a phenomenal Olympics, and there's no way that you should be underpaid. But anyway, we'll figure that out. We'll get it done. But answer me this. I'm interested in this. How did you know right before the games kicked off in Tokyo? When did you know that she was going to be really competitive with Katie? Because there was a lot of talk, honestly, that you had peaked for the trials? I mean, a lot of Americans thought, I'm going to tell you what the American thought was.
Absolute rubbish.
You guys peaked too early. You give your best performance in Australia and you can't back it up at the Olympic Games. That's the talk, mate. And so there was a lot of confidence that Katie had obviously not rested for the trials and she was going to go to the Olympics and just destroy you. So how do you know, when do you know that you guys are going to be competitive on that particular day?
Well, I'll go back. Arnie had a huge shoulder problem. Huge. We really did disguise it well. I didn't want anybody to know. I didn't want that to be attention to the media, and then it gets more into Arnie's head. So we had a big problem. Like, Shia could only race twice before trials, and that was a problem for me because I needed to build confidence. So she was...
What do you mean shoulder problem? Like keeping her out of the pool? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. Like, after state titles, which is January, she was out of the water. She couldn't do what she did. And you got to remember, it's a massive learning curve for me as well, because I was just burning inside, like going, Arnie, come on, Arnie, come on, we're going to miss this, we're going to miss this. Mm. And Arnie being Arnie, she's meticulous in her process and really particular. She then couldn't distinguish between the pain of the injury and just pain of the shoulder of training. I had to go through that. That took a few months. But she had a big problem. Like, I'm telling you, it was a big problem. It was an issue. It wasn't just the tendon. It was also the bone. It was a bone structure around a rotator cuff. So we had an issue to deal with. And with the issue then comes confidence. So her confidence, I needed to gain. Her confidence crashed. And I thought, oh, no, here we go. You know, it was very difficult. She went 4:01. Prior to trials, which was in April 4:01. Mm. Prior to that, she was 4:06. Mm. Like, it was, I'm going, oh God, what are we doing here? Like, this is going to be really difficult. I thought, if she can't crack 4 minutes, it's going to be very difficult for me to sell her this dream.
Mm.
But the 4:01, the way that she swam it was timid, and she didn't want to go out in pursuit of what she needed to do in the first 200. But when it came to trials, we spoke about having that being that offensive and going out and getting the feel of what it feels like to do your 400 again. And she just hit it, mate.
So she's 4:01 in the lead up to trials, but then she's what, 356?
356.9.
How much rest did you give her?
3 days.
3 days. That's it.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, when you call it 3 days, Brett, it's 3 days of drop taper, but you drop in like probably the week before. I kept her at six.
Mm.
I kept her at 6K. But what people didn't realize is that, well, coaches will understand this, is that it was this compounding effect of work that we had. We put some really good work in 2020, really good work, and before that injury. So the injury gave us probably a bit of a rest and then a move forward and a huge adaptation. But it wasn't like she had no work under her belt prior. She had compounded work that we had systematically evolved. So, you know, that there shows me something as well as a coach, as a reflecting point for myself. That's where it came to. And I know that she's faster. I know that she's faster.
You know she's faster off more than 3 days rest then. You know, like how much rest are you giving her? You know, you go to the trials, 5 weeks later you're going to the games. How much rest are you giving her before that first 400 free at the Olympic Games?
I still kept her up because I've learned from trials. I still kept her up.
She needed that work.
Yeah, she needed that work. Because you got to remember, for about 3 months there, she didn't have that work.
So and she's coming the 800 too.
Yeah. Exactly right. So we just kept it going forward, but we just became a little bit more specific towards the end, you know, race pace and more suited efforts. We didn't have that too much before trials. But trials gave her confidence, right? Mm. Trials gave her confidence. You can't take away confidence, Brett. Confidence. She was confident, man. She went to sleep that night thinking that, I can fight this. I can win this.
But you got 5 weeks, though. I mean, there's there's doubt that creeps in within that 5 weeks. And then you hear the other side of it of like, the Aussies aren't going to swim fast. They never do. This is typical Australia. They're going to swim their best at trials. They're not going to. I mean, is she hearing this stuff as well?
No, I do, and I use it as motivation. That motivates me.
Right.
I got motivated when someone told me, and I love my American coaches. Like, I don't know Dave Durden too well. He didn't really talk to me there, right. But I know the other guys. I know not Greg too much, but was very polite. What a beautiful man. I know that he's great. All my research on him. Mm. I would probably have liked to have been coached by Greg, and that gives you the honor of what I think of him. But I use it as motivation. I heard that they were upset with the way that I carried on at trials.
Mm.
They thought that I was over the top.
Mm.
So I was like, all right, well, bring it on. Like, okay, dog it, here we go. Like, and that was nothing against the athletes, because I've been with the Cali Condors and the American athletes I absolutely love.
Mm.
I absolutely love. I love these guys. They're unbelievable. They're just beautiful people. Mm. But that's motivation, right? That's motivation. Like, there's one thing that motivates me, and it's from when I was a swimmer. I have incredible doubt. If I don't have doubt, something's wrong. I use doubt as fire. Mm. If I'm not doubting that this is right, or something's not, like, I'm doubting myself, I then fight within to get out of it. Doubt for me is my motivator. So if someone's giving me huge praise and going, oh, hey, they're going so well, they're doing this, they're doing that, I'm like, what's going on? I need something.
Mm.
So right. You search for it.
So you search for the doubt.
Well, I'll give you a motivator. And yep. Please, Ray Luce, if you're listening to this, you're a great coach. I like you. It's not against you. But in 2019, after the 200 freestyle, and I think Lily had the 100 breast, I was right at the last to get on the bus. And Arnie got second. I didn't like the way that she swam. I thought she was easily into 153.5 by that stage, but she wasn't. She didn't execute it right. Something just wasn't working. So I got on the bus, and there was an Egyptian swimmer on the right-hand side, and there was Ray and Lily sitting next to each other. And Lily's the best, mate. She's on the Cali Condor. She's the best competitor I've ever seen and a beautiful person. And I got on the bus. I'm in the Australian gear, and I had my headset on, like this, you know, headset. And I walked up, and I saw them, and I clicked it off. And I went to sit at the back, directly at the back of them, directly. There's seats everywhere. And I sat directly behind them, and I turned off my headset. But Ray didn't even notice. They didn't notice that I was an Australian coach. They didn't know who I was. And I sat there, and Ray's talking. They're talking a bit about you know, Simone's digging in and she's angry and she wants to get revenge. And then Lily was talking about a race, and it was this beautiful chemistry between the two of them. And then Raya looked at Lily and gone, and I'm listening. I'm like right there going, did you see that young jackass in the 200 free? And I was like, well, that's my swimmer. And I was going to do like Shrek donkey in between the carrot and just go through and just stick my head through and go, that jackass is my swimmer. But I sat there and I just listened, going out too fast. And I used that for the next 2 years. And I knew that I wasn't too fast. She just was too hard the first 35. I knew that she's capable of going out in 55.5. And I knew she's capable of coming back in 57.5. I knew that. And that's what was needed. And I knew that because I was creator of that program. I knew that. So I was thinking, he thinks I'm a jackass. I'm the creator of that. And I was like, just used it. I just used it, you know. But he's great. Ray's great. I'm not. But that's how I used it, bro.
Oh, man, you couldn't see me on camera, but I'm smiling the whole time.
But that's how I used it. Like,
yeah.
Like, I really like Greg. And I know that Greg got up because this is who I am. Greg got up and spoke at the I think it was the World Swimming Conference there in Dallas in 2019. I wasn't there, but I got the notes and so forth. And he basically said that America will beat Australia and win gold in the 4x2. And I'm the head of the 4x2 coach for that relay. So I used that. He won. Greg got me. I went straight up to Greg and said, congratulated him. I congratulated him. He mastered a plan and they beat us. They beat us. And I went directly to Greg and said, mate, well done. But I used that to, But I didn't pull it off.
That's interesting because, I mean, you had success in Tokyo, but you bring up the 4x2 and there's criticism of that relay and there's criticism of the way it was put together. And I mean, look, Australians have more opinions than I do. And on the outside, Americans are like, oh, well, we got them on that one. But and the Chinese.
Yeah, they got us. They beat us. China beat us.
But what happened? Like, what's your side of the story here? We individualized training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net.
I'm going to take a bit of responsibility, of course, because I'm the leader of that team. But, I mean, I only went 154.5. The best is 153.0. The girl will give you everything. But the girls won a 400 freestyle, become Olympic champ on the biggest event of the Olympics against Katie. Mm-hmm. She's then won the 200 under pressure. She was the favorite. You can't hide away from being the favorite in 153.0. There's a cost to do with emotion somewhere.
Mm.
And it came when, and also with Emma, you know, like Emma's better than going to 155.1, but Emma's going to give you your heart and soul. She's unbelievable. She's fantastic. She just was, at that stage, just energy deficient a little bit, maybe from emotion, a big meet so far. She's got a lot of events coming forward. So they just weren't right where they needed to be. And if they were, everything would have been okay because that's just how it basically unfolded.
Right.
But with Arnie, it was I gave her the afternoon off just to rest and recover and just get away from the pool and get away from the atmosphere. And I should have said to her to go to the gym and get on the bike and move and do a core program and do something just to keep her moving, not that everything just goes bang, stop.
Right.
So I reflected on that. That's a moment there. I think that we would have been a little bit better. But it's not like Arnie gets up and goes, oh, I'm going to cruise this. We've got this easy. We should win this easy.
I think, yeah. And that's where people mess it up is like.
Yeah. And Brett, you've got to remember that girl that went 155.1, Molly O'Callaghan. She's my girl. I coach her. She got the world junior record. But they knew their role. 4 in the heat, 4 in the final. Save people. Make sure they can go to bed early. No adrenaline shot through their body. They can sleep, that they can cover, and they can bring in the warrior in the morning.
Give me a little bit about her, actually, Molly O'Callaghan. I don't know much about her. She's just done these phenomenal things in front of the world. It's like, who is this girl? She's young. Everyone's talking about Titmus, but this girl, my God. Tell me about her.
Titmus better be careful, and people around the world better be careful on Molly because she's dogged. Her mother is from Croatia, Tony. Her father, Nick, is from England. They're Australian now, of course. But my wife's from Slovakia, Eastern Europe. They're dogged, mate. They're tough. They are tough people. They've gone through wars. They've gone through hardship. And her mom is tough. Her father is dogged. And Molly has that in her, right? So Molly has doubt. She gets nervous, but she just fights it, right? And I joke with her that Molly has 5 voodoo dolls of me that she goes home at night and stabs them. And I'm like, because I'm sort of going at her. You know, I'm a bit like a tiger with her. And she just gets in and she's dogged. What people don't know is in the relay, she went 53.0. And then she went in the medley relay last. She went 52.3. She came back in 26.7, one of the fastest backing speeds in the world. And in her relay, when she went 155.1 and broke the world junior record, she came back in 58.1, the second fastest split at the Tokyo Olympics for backhand. She's going to be there. She's tough. She's good. She's got a magnificent kick. She's dogged. And she's good to coach, mate.
Does Titmuss know it? Like, all right, this young girl is right on my heels.
Well, Arnie, if you don't know it now. If you don't know it, honestly, know it now. And Molly, believe, mate, believe, because you were remarkable at Tokyo and you have got it in you. You've got it in you.
How do you manage that, though, mate? How do you manage two women that are at the top of their game, but they're competing against each other in a way?
Well, I think not this has been any complications yet, but you just don't get them to go against each other all the time. You make sure you pick your fights.
Right.
You make sure that you, provide them with the opportunity to recover, and then provide them with the opportunity then to be competitive. Mm. You've got to respect one another. Molly knows that Arnie's the benchmark. Arnie knows now that Molly is hunting. I mean, it's simple. You've got Katie's going to come back stronger. You've got Summer McIntosh, which is going to be unbelievable. Mm. You've got Penny, who is just a warrior when it comes to the big meets. You've got the Chinese. I mean, have a look at the Chinese women. They're 4x2. They're going to be there. And you've got Siobhan. Like, she's unbelievable. Like, there. Look, if you can't hold your ground in your environment, how are you going to hold there? How are you going to hold there?
Is there anything you do now? I mean, you've had time to reflect. You've had time to think about this. You've got 3 years till Paris. I mean, you've gone from talking about the GOAT to now winning, you know, multiple Olympic gold medals. So now you're there. How do you then go from where you've wanted to be to maintaining that type of level that Katie has been able to maintain for 7 or 8 years?
Oh, another great question, Brett. Well, maybe the philosophy is this. Hard times create strong people. Strong people create good times. Good times create weak people. Weak people create hard times. Where is Arnie situated now? Where is Molly situated now? Arnie maybe is now in the good times, and I've got to make sure she's aware. So, Arnie, if you're listening, you've got to be aware that you're heading into the good times, which creates weak people. You have got to be understanding of your situation. Molly's hungry. She's got to climb that mountain. So I've got to make sure I provide that environment going, guys, it's over. The next one is Paris. The next one is, if you think that this is the limelight and you're getting all the glory and the praise and, you know, endorsements and all this, and you think that's the name of the game, then you've missed the reason why you started our sport. And that's going to be a hard sell, especially for Arnie, but she's got to understand it. And we've got reflecting points there because she got too social after 218 and she got her ass kicked at the Australian short course. And then she got dogged for 6 weeks and won the world championships. It's you can't flow through that. You've got to understand that situation. Like if you want to be a strong person, you're going to have to go through some hard times. You don't see roadworks people driving a Mercedes car and living in a mansion. You don't see it, mate. They're up early working on the road. You know, they're hard.
Mm. It's easy to forget how you got there, isn't it? And it's easy to say, I don't know if I want to go through that again. But
well, that's his drive, man. Look at Katie. Look at Michael. I mean, we spoke about Michael, and I don't know Michael. I would love to have met her. I met Bob. I would love to have actually gone out and had a steak and a wine with Bob. I think he's just tremendous. But I never had that opportunity, and I hope maybe I never will. But with Michael, we spoke about when Arnie going before that 200, before by two and a half, she goes, I'm just exhausted. I'm going to get ready for the 800. And we're like, Michael, look what Michael did. It is unbelievable. When you sit back on the couch and you look and you go, there's Michael winning gold, 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 and you're thinking how easy, you just turn the TV on. So you might be having a cup of coffee, go to the gym, you're doing some emails, then you go, oh, the swimming's on, you turn the TV on. You don't know the process was taking place. Did he get sleep? How much swim down did he do? Had a massage, a drug test, a press conference? You have no idea. It's just basically watching a movie. You don't know what's gone into the production. So we got the feel of it, and Katie was unbelievable how she had to do her 1500 or 200 of the day. Like,
yeah,
it's a mammoth and a monstrous effort. It's unbelievable.
I was going to say that. Is that something you consider, the 1500? Because Katie's in that realm. Katie's looking.
No,
you just brush it. Do you try and win the 800 now, or do you the 800 and I focus on the 2 and 4? Like, where do you go from here?
No, Brett. No, honestly, I've done one 1500 just for training purposes and me for Arnie. I was literally, if I had a bow and arrow, I would have started shooting balloons and lights out. I was watching this going, oh, God. No, mate, just not designed. You know, like it's a different event, mate. It's a different training mythology we're going to have to do to get into the 1500. No, we're quite happy where we are with that. No.
Let me ask you this then. Can she break this world record in the 200 freestyle? A lot of people are saying that this is a suited record. It's almost untouchable in a way, but is she good enough to break this 200?
Yes, definitely, 100%. And the 400. The Olympics was about a race. Like, Arnie went out in 158.1. That's not where I wanted Arnie to be. She's better than that. She's 153.0 going on 158.1, 5.1 seconds. Arnie, what are you doing? Like, you're going out in 158. Sorry, your best is 158.1. You're going out in 2 minutes and 2.17. Mm. She was capable of being out at the 156.8, 157.2, right? But what people don't understand, the evolution with Arnie was her back end. She went out in 158.1 and came back in 158.5. 158.5, no one's ever done that. No one's ever done come back in a 158.5, even Katie. And Katie's at 804.
Thank you. See that, I'm going to click back onto me. That's where my doubt was, mate. I'm doing this thing live. I didn't think she's coming back in 150. Give me some credit here. And I had to say this to her. I had to apologize. I don't know the race plan, but there's no way I'm thinking she's coming back at 158.1. I mean, she came back like a machine.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? That Susie O'Neill was there. She was there watching the race. Mm. And when Arnie won, she said, that is exactly to the day, 25 years since I won my first gold in Atlanta for the 200 butterfly. And wow. Then she said to me, Dean, if Arnie swam that time on the way back on a 200 freestyle, 158.5, she would have beaten me in Sydney for the Olympic gold.
Wow.
That was extraordinary.
Wow.
I was like, wow. We knew we had back end. Well, it's an evolution. It's a compound and effect. But Arnie, if you want to go into that 355, 354 realm, like, you're not swimming like that going to 158.1, girl. Like, but she just looked, I was watching that race, you know, and I just watched it, and I made sure I had no stopwatches because I wanted to visually just watch. I wanted to, like, watching a movie, right? And so I didn't have any stopwatches, but my visual cues were, she looks comfortable, she looks easy, she looks in control. Kayla looked awesome.
I want to ask you this, okay? She's listening to this. She's seeing you talking to the camera. She's on her break. She's enjoying. But when is the time that you have decided that you need to have this talk with her? Have you given her space here? Or, like, when are you pulling back in here? Has there been an agreement?
Oh, another great question, Brett. No, there's no agreement yet. I when we arrived in Brisbane after quarantine, I think I said to my guys, I'll be in contact with you on the 29th of August, which is a Sunday. I drove up to the coast at Noosa. It's a beautiful place in the world. Mm. And I arrived at 10 o'clock and I sent them all a message. So, guys, just a reminder that I said that I was going to call you or message you on the 29th. Nothing is compulsory at the moment, but probably start getting moving, go for a walk, go for a run, do some gym. If you want to go to the pool, hop in the water. I'll be in contact by the end of the week because I'm not ready as well. I need to recover. I really am empty. I've just dropped my batteries down and I need to recharge. So, and they need that as well, probably more than me. One, to be away from me, be away from the program, be away from the grind, be away from one another, be with their loved ones. I haven't yet given the date. I need them to go, Dean, I'm ready. I'm ready. It's not ready to get back into work and let's go after it. It's about being ready to start the engine again and then start the steps to climb the rudder of the ladder. So I'm, what I've learned over the last few years is it's okay if things aren't going to be right over the next probably 6 months. That's okay. Paris, different. Paris is different.
Is there any fear at all that any of them will come to you and say, I don't want to do this again?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I do. I think there'll be a few people that, but it's not just a few people from my program, Brett. I think it's global, that there'll be a lot of changes in different programs all around the world. It's the Olympics, it's done. All right, if you want to make a move, you make a move now. Ours is probably a demanding program. It's a tough program. It's challenging because you're held accountable. It's not held that we're giving you rubbish work to do. As I said, Annie doesn't do more than 60K a week. No, she doesn't do, and she's at silver medals and 800 free. I know way more, probably five of the athletes in that final and in the whole program there at Tokyo, out of the 24 athletes, probably 22 of them do more than Arnie. But it's accountability. It's accountability. That's probably what's the hard part.
How is it when an athlete comes to you and they don't want to be held to that standard? Like, you know, it's too much for them. Has that happened to you where they've said like, and they might not say that in that respect, but there's obviously been a split somewhere, but is that difficult for you when you realize that an athlete is just not ready for that type of commitment?
I don't think they would probably come. I think they sort of know that from me. And then you get found out pretty early. You got the athletes there in the program who are really striving for it. That will basically, you know, they'll test them out as well. You just wouldn't fit in that mold. But I've got some really good trainers and athletes and people to make themselves accountable. Like, there's a kid called Charlie Cox, 200 butterfly, one of the best trainers I've seen to do with butterfly. He's just as meticulous in his adaptability with training on being a metronome that he just holds. But we just can't yet get him into the race mode yet. You know, we've got to build a lot more strength. But he really does. He comes early, does what he needs to do. He pushes through, and he's a really good boy. But, you know, you have those people, and then people look around like, I've got to be that. I've got to do that. Look at Arnie. Look at Mitch. Look at Charlie, you know. One is Kai Taylor. He's a Haley Lewis's son. Oh, mate, he's 49.9, he's 22.9. He's one of the best trainers I've ever coached. Mentality, mindset, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. He's just the most beautiful boy. Oh, Brett, you would love him, mate. Haley and Greg have done this tremendous job with him. And now I've got to make sure that I hold my
Haley Lewis, man, that's a name from the past. What an athlete, too. I was on a couple of teams with her.
Oh, she's great, mate.
Yeah, legendary. Let me ask you this. I want to talk about the ISL real quick. How did you get involved in the ISL? How did you end up?
Wait a second.
Yeah.
My pants here. Condors, baby. The Condors.
Mate.
The Condors, mate.
Mate, the Condors are untouchable.
Mate, the Condors. The greatest team. The greatest team. Jason Lezak. Jeff Julian, mate, they are the pinnacle. Mate, I saw you at Vegas because you're on LA Current.
Yeah, of course.
account, eh? But Jason is the greatest, mate. He's the greatest manager. He's the greatest people manager. He just allows you to do your job. He's fun to be around with. Mate, they are the best, mate.
He's good. I mean, Jason Lizak's good. He's not the best 50 freestyler I've ever met.
best relay swimmer.
Best relay swimmer in the world for sure.
Mate, the Condors, like the ISL was unbelievable. Like, I wanted to be with the Americans because one was just, you know, like they are for us the pinnacle. And I wanted to be with them and I wanted to create relationships with them, like with Greg Troy, which is the best. Greg is like Bowley, he's the Yoda, and he's phenomenal. And then you're just watching people like Caleb. Like, Caleb is the most professional person I've ever seen. The story that was in Naples, like he was, before it was 100 freestyle, he came up to me and he's going, "Dean, you know the doggies?" I said, "No, mate, what's wrong?" And he goes, "I've just been vomiting. I think I've eaten something wrong." And I went, "Oh, God, I'll go and find the doc." And anyway, he composed himself. He understood what his talent is and his ability. And he just went into himself, "I've got to compete for the Condors and I've got to do my job." And he's been vomiting, mate. And he goes, 45 seconds for 100 free.
Wow.
Like, he gets in the water. He is encouraging to the other guys. Like, you know, he was giving Bo Becker a bit of like, "Come on, mate, you're okay. Hey, I didn't do my best time. You're okay. Let's get in and let's warm down and let's go again." Like, Caleb is unbelievable, mate.
Yeah, so it's kind of sick how nice he is and how good he is. Yeah, those don't usually go together.
He is, mate. He's nice. He's everything. Like, he's even more what people say about him.
Yeah.
Like, you watch him, he shuts down his breath with 15 meters to go. He trains like that. Greg set his mindset. Greg set it.
Yeah.
You know, with Sergio, they set his mindset. He's about mindset. He makes sure, comes into the pool, he looks at the program. There's a sprint program, there's a distance program. One says 10 400s IM, one says maybe, let's call it 15 150s. He goes, "Greg, I'll do the 10 4s IM." "Okay." Because I want to make sure that I'm there.
So some of these things that you've put in your own program were reinforced with going to the ISL and seeing these top guys.
Mate, absolutely. Like watching just being around these great athletes, like like Olivia from Georgia Tech. Like, she's just a beautiful girl. Like, just what there were like five athletes there on the Cali Condors that were on the from Georgia Tech, and the way how close they were and interacted and how fun they made it, and they got on the water and they did their job. They did their training sessions. They did their job, but they believed. And they were absolutely in tune with their sport.
They're from Georgia. We'll forgive you. You don't have to add the Tech on there, but that's all right. You're from
it's Georgia. It's not Georgia Tech.
It's just Georgia, yeah. It's Jack Bowley. Jack Bowley, Georgia.
Yeah, Jack, he's great, mate.
He's like, a good man.
He's literally the bulldog.
Yes, the bulldog. But why no ISL this year then? You just needed a break from it?
Well, when I needed a break, I wanted to go last year. I really wanted to go last year. My plan for going into the Olympics looks so much better with ISL, but COVID, mate, Australia is we are absolutely obsessed with trying to make sure we don't have this virus. So we're having lockdowns left, right and center. Like, we've come from the Olympics and we've got quarantine for 2 weeks, and the quarantine, mate, it is a quarantine. You have your own room. You have a red line that you can't go past. You wear a mask. You know, you can't go and do exercise. You're stuck in your confinement. You know, it's tough. Like, if we went to ISL, we have to come back and go quarantine. And I believe this time that they weren't going to pay for even quarantine. You have to pay $3,000.
Oh, wow.
Of your own money. And that's 2 weeks, mate. Like, then during that time, like, that means you would have come home, you would have to quarantine, you'd go back and you quarantine again. Just too difficult, you know. But ISL, mate, unbelievable. Loved it. We love it.
Absolutely, mate. let me ask you this then. This is a personal question. This is a tough question, but I think it's so relative to all coaches, you know, coaches that just dedicate their lives. How has this impacted your family? You got two young kids, you got a wife at home. Mate, you're intense. Like you're bringing this stuff home. You're thinking all night long. And I asked Arnie the same thing. I mean, Dean's at home thinking how he can make his athletes better all the time. This has got to have an impact on your family, mate. It's got to be tough.
Oh, mate. It has. It does. It's something that I'm wrestling with. How do I get to do that again?
Right.
I was obsessed. I was besotted with trying to achieve for these Olympics and for the guys and making sure that St. Peter's keeps number one. And, mate, it's... I've married a beautiful, stoic lady from Slovakia who's a lawyer. She's gone through hard times over there and she understands hard times and she understands to be resilient. But that doesn't matter. Like, I come home, she just wants me to be present with the boys and the family. Exactly. And I can't be, mate. I can't be. Like, one of the things that I have is, you know, I keep the kids accountable and I keep myself accountable. I've got to make sure I walk on that pool deck in the afternoons and the mornings. And I have energy. So I get up an hour and 20 minutes before I go to the pool in the morning to make sure that I'm up. I cannot be one of those people that alarm goes off for 20 minutes ago. I jump in the car and I go and I walk into the pool. I've got to be up and I've got to be ready. In the afternoon, it's the same. I have 1.5 hours sleep from around about 11:30 to 1 o'clock every day. I have to have it. I'm sick of people doing meetings during that time. It's ridiculous. I need to have my sleep and I go into the pool deck to give my energy for the guys. And if I don't, I feel like I'm letting them down, letting myself down, I'm letting Australia down, I'm letting St. Peter's down. And I've got to have that energy. But then that takes away from my family, because on Sunday I still have my sleep. I'm just dead. I'm not present with my family. And it's starting to cost my family a bit. And to be honest with you, Brett, I don't know. I don't have a solution yet to that problem. I've listened to Greg talk about him going to play golf and he just needs that time. But I also listened to Greg and I was envious of the way that he's with his family as well. He gives a lot back. Like he's really manages it well. Well, I don't.
Greg Troy, we're talking about, yeah.
No, Greg Mann.
Oh, Greg Mann. Oh.
Yeah. I've listened to his podcast and so forth. The way he manages, he's very good. Very good. I don't have that. I don't know if I'm going to have that. And that's really sad. I don't know. And that'll be the thing that will drive me out. That'll be the thing that will drive me out when I go, my athletes don't really care with what I'm doing.
Right.
And my family is now completely affected. I think that will be the driver.
How old are your boys?
It's hard, Brett. I don't know how you guys, I mean, maybe it was a bit of a cost for you. I don't know. But talking to a lot of coaches, it's extremely difficult. I mean, I hope that parents who are listening to this and athletes in particular, you got to remember that your coach sees you more than your father or mother. They absolutely invest more. And I say this, and parents are listening, going, oh, that's rubbish. Okay, I'll explain this to you. Most parents have a job, and they go to their job, and they invest in their job. My job is to invest into your kids every day, every minute. When you're at work for 8 hours, you're thinking about sales, or managerial procedures, or better in the company. I'm not. I'm thinking about better in your kid. That's the difference. I'm not thinking about my child. I'm thinking about your child.
Man, I'm with you 100%. I'm with you 100%. I was there. I've done this. I've been head coach of a major university where I'm in charge of 60 college kids. I'm in charge of 20 professional athletes, you know, within that group. So we're talking about 80 swimmers. Then I'm in charge of coaches and staff of about 12 people. So we're talking almost 100 people that I'm responsible for ultimately. And I did 10 years of this, mate, where it was back to back to back, where it was, you know, you go from the college season to the long course season, the World Championships, the Olympic Games, the Pan Pacs. You do all this, you know, and you go from that to that to that to that to that, and you invest so much into the kids, so much into the program for the program success. You're talking about St. Peter's right now. You're talking about your own athletes. You're investing all this time and energy into these things that are outside your family, and you're taking away from your family. And man, I'm a divorced father now, 2 years on, where I'm divorced, and it's very, very difficult to be, you know, I could sit here and tell you personal stories about how difficult it is in terms of the relationships that I didn't have with my own children that I've had with, you know, other people's kids, because I've invested in them and their success and their glory and taken away from the time and energy of my own kids. It's a very difficult balance. And I'm not sitting here telling you, you know, either way. I'm just saying that it's very difficult. And how old are your boys right now?
8 and 4. And Brett, I don't want to be disrespectful to you. And I because, you know, I know you well, but mate, I don't want to have that. I don't want to be divorced. No. I don't want to have that issues with my kids. But
I know.
But I just hope that people that are listening can understand the investment and energy and time and your creativity of the mind that goes into their child.
Right.
Their child. It's there must, like, you can't go home and go, oh, I'm with my child and blah, 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 because there's always a cost, right? There's right. an opposite effect. Mm-hmm. So you need to recover.
Mm-hmm.
My
mind was always going, mate. My mind was always going. And that was the biggest thing with my ex-wife, is like, you're not present. You're physically here, but you're not mentally here. I need you mentally.
100%. 100%. Yeah. I'm on a break. I'm going to try and take 6 to 8 weeks. I can't yet let go because I'm still dealing stuff with school. I'm still dealing stuff with a potential coach that something's happened on. I'm dealing with a couple of the athletes or whatever. I can't. I'm going, I've got to somehow just let this go and come back up. Like, I don't know how people do it. Like, I look at Greg, as I see Greg Meehan, and I go, wow, mate, phenomenal coach, and, you know, huge responsibility and expectation on his shoulders being at Stanford and so forth. But he does it better. He does it way better than myself. And I don't have a solution to it. I don't have I'll get rid of the solution. I don't even have a pathway. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, mate, because I think that will be the killer of me. That will be the one that hurt, that makes me leave the game or stop or whatever. But you know, yeah, it's challenging, man. I just don't know. And if I really sat down now, if you and I really went down this pathway of this conversation, I probably think you and I would probably have a tear. We'd probably start crying. Or, you know, it'd be, because it's that raw. It's that difficult.
It is, mate. It is.
Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hand. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com, use code Brett at checkout, and save 10%. I certainly don't want you to look back in 10 years from now when your son is 18 and 14 and have the type of regret that I do, mate. I really don't, you know. And so I want this to be part of the conversation of really analyzing, because we've analyzed a lot here, but I want this to be part of the analysis of understanding that your family.
You heard, like, you've had some amazing coaches on there, Bowley, Greg, you know, Greg Troy, you've had Greg, I think you've had Dave Durden, you've had a huge amount of, you know, Sergio, Bob. What do they say? Have you asked them, how do they do it?
Look, a lot of these guys I know personally, and you're right. It's a difficult balance for all of us. There's a lot of pressure for all of us. We're all competing. We're all challenged. We're all going from meet to meet to meet. You know, here's my advice that I can give you based on just my own experience. What I would say to you is that there is a time where you walk into the house and your wife and your kids want you and need you. And you have to find that time and energy. And sometimes what it would mean for me, and I wish I did this more, is just drive around the block three times because I wasn't prepared to immediately go home yet.
Yeah.
And so if you immediately go home and you walk in and you just know that you're not ready, then they're gonna feel that too. And I wish I did this more, but I would drive around the block a few times and just prepare myself to be ready for my family. And my God, I wish I did that more, man. And I hope you do that. I hope
that is amazing. That's intelligent right there and reflecting points. I'll give you an example. We've got this sort of concept between coaches that you go, you've got to make sure that you are living relatively close to work within 15 minutes because otherwise it becomes quite challenging. You know, you drive back and forward.
Yep.
But I find if you're 10 minutes away, you don't get that opportunity to just drop because you're normally making phone calls in the car.
Yep.
And you walk in. But I've a couple of times I've gone to Chandler. For those people that understand where Chandler is, it's around about 40 minutes away from where I live. It's the basically head center of Brisbane. And when I have that 40 minutes, I'm calling, I'm dissecting, I'm thinking, it's over, and I walk in and I'm a little bit better. But I would hate that travel.
Yep.
I think it's that 20-minute window that you need.
Yeah.
You need 20 minutes. And when you get home, you need to sit down in front of the TV and watch reality TV or Arnold Schwarzenegger and Terminator 2, smash up some people, or, you know, some action movie, Rambo. For 20 minutes, you just sort of look at there like a zombie and then bang, you're right.
Yeah, I did that a few times, that's for sure.
Yeah, you need that back. You know, you sit there and how's your day, love? And like, oh, I'm not ready.
That's why I would drive around the block because I knew as soon as I walked in, they would want me to be ready. And I wasn't, you know, at times.
Yeah, you have to be too. Like, it's wrong. It's wrong for me to walk out. I just can't. I don't know how to work it out yet.
Well, the other thing is the phone is you know, it just gets in the way of everything. So, you know, my phone, we had to deal with recruiting. We had to deal with, you know, dealing with issues of different kids. And so I had to set boundaries and look, I wish I did more of this in reflection. A lot of this is in reflection and I'm telling you this because I don't want you to get to this point. What I had to do was set boundaries. I had to say, look, you've got me from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. I'm yours. You want to text me at 6:01 a.m. Boom, I'm answering it. You want to text me at 5:59 p.m. I'm answering it. But from 6 to 6, I'm yours. And then from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., that's my family time. It has to be. It's got to be.
I struggle with that, Brett, because I'm on that sort of wavelength or philosophy of, like, let's say, for example, you know, Mitch is 28 years old, but Mitch calls me at 11:30, something's happened. I'll be there for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'll be there for you. If that phone goes and I look at it and it's Mitch, or Elijah, or Arnie, I'm just giving an example. It's 11:30. They need me. They need me. And I'm there.
And that's okay. That's okay in emergencies. They've got to understand that. If there's an emergency, I get it, and my wife gets it, and my family gets it. There's emergency situations. But if that's going off 3 or 4 times a week at 11:30 at night, then there's got to be some boundaries, mate. That's where the boundary and that's what you just got to explain to your kids is, I mean, your athletes is like, look, I'm yours for these 12 hours. Like, use me as much as you want. Come to me at midday and just give me everything. Let's have a meeting. But at 9 o'clock at night, 9:30 at night, my wife desperately needs me. This is when I've got to be there for her. I've got to be there for my sons. And if you're not putting those boundaries in, then it becomes so distorted that over time, I'm not talking within 6 months. I'm talking over a period of 5 to 6 years. this becomes very problematic for your family over an extended period of time. Very problematic. And this is where you're going to have problems, you know?
I understand what you're saying. I just don't have the answers, right? I know that my wife will listen to this probably in a week's time or whatever.
If you put some boundaries in for your wife, she's going to love that. She's going to appreciate that. And then she knows when she's yours. She knows when she's yours. Like, your athletes know when you're theirs. Hey, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., I'm giving you everything of Dean. But at 9 o'clock at night, Dean is my wife's. This is my son's. My sons know that they can come to me at 8 o'clock at night, and I'm going to give them everything because I've given my athletes everything I've got. And then you've got to strike some balance in there to say, all right, I'm giving everything to my athletes. I'm giving everything to my family. I've got to have some downtime for Dean. You know, you got to allow some sort of like boundary. Like, I love UFC. I love the UFC.
Yeah, it's good.
There's about 4 hours of UFC fighting. And I just say, look, every week, just give me the 4 hours to watch UFC. Now, some guys go out and play golf. Other guys go out and, you know, whatever it is. But if you build that in as well, then there's team time, there's family time, and then there's this down period for you where you can decompress. And then that provides balance. And balance is a strange word. We think balance needs to be 50-50. Balance is not a 50-50 thing. Balance could be 20-80. That could be balance. Yeah. You know, it could be 80% team, 20% family or whatever. But balance is just striking a point where your family knows that you are theirs and your team knows that you are theirs. And then you have some downtime where you've got those 4 hours per week where that's my time as well. And if you start to build that in over a period of a few years, that's when you can get that balance that your family needs, your team needs, and they have a clear understanding then, mate.
I think with this conversation we've just had in the last 10 minutes, probably for the parents that are listening, please, if you can understand what I'm saying to you, your coaches are invested in your child.
For sure.
They are invested. They are dreaming for your child when you're not. That is the most important thing. They are doing it for your children, not their own. So give them a break. Support them. Mm-hmm. Encourage them. Give them a gift. On their birthday, give them a present. On Christmas, give them a present. You know, come into a session once a month and you're picking up their kids, give them a coffee, give them a slab of beer or one beer or a bottle of wine, just something. You got to understand that they are going home and honestly thinking about your child.
Yeah.
Yep. So please, parents, understand that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, mate, for sure. But, you have an agreement with Arnie, you have an agreement with Elijah, you have an agreement with your athletes, and they have a clear understanding and they understand the agreement. But I'm telling you, and this is just advice because I don't want you to end up where I ended up, your wife wants the same agreement, mate. Your kids want the same agreement. They don't want you all the time, but when they have you for a certain amount of time, they want you. Mate, I can't tell you how many soccer matches I went to and I was on the phone recruiting the whole time. Recruiting, mate. Recruiting someone else's kids. And most of the time, 90% of the time, those recruits I'm talking to, they didn't
come to my shocking program. It's shocking when you think about it, isn't it?
Mate, I'm sitting there watching my daughter play soccer and I'm recruiting someone else's kids who doesn't
even
come to my program.
My son's playing tennis and I'm trying to work out problems to do with another kid in a program. And then you're watching these beautiful parents watching the kids playing tennis and they're just looking and like just going like, oh, beautiful. Look at my kid playing tennis. And I'm going, I'm not even there.
Yeah, not even there.
Not even there.
Yeah. Well, listen, mate, you've identified this problem. You can't now look back on this talk that we're having 3 years from now and say, I did nothing about it. It's your responsibility. I'm putting it on you right now in front of the whole world. I'm putting the responsibility on you to say, find balance. And again, balance is not a 50-50 thing. Balance is just being there when they need you to be there.
I will ask the coaches out there, whoever's listening, I'll ask to put in a message for myself and to other coaches out there, how to do it, give advice. You've given great advice, Hawkey, but I'm asking people to maybe give myself advice and other coaches out there that are in that same sort of mold. Like Dave Marsh, you know, these guys, you know, please message and, you know, Ben Titley and so forth, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, I know plenty that have either been on the verge of everything falling apart and figuring it out, or you know what, it's all falling apart. Coaching is a very difficult gig, mate. It's a tough one. And especially at the level that you're performing at, where you're putting it all on the line, you know, you're sacrificing it all. And mate, the only thing I saw in that celebration, from my point of view, I've heard your point of view, from my point of view, the only thing I saw there was just a release of energy, because you've got this pent up energy for years and years of like thought and planning, and then finally you see something executed that you've thought over a million times in your head. Yeah. And there's this massive release of energy. That's all I saw. So for anyone else that has any other opinion, you have no fucking idea what I saw. That's what I saw.
I couldn't believe that I was getting chastised. I know there were some American, even some really good American athletes in different sports saying stuff. I was going, what? Surely you'd understand what your coach gives you. Surely. And it's disrespectful to Arnie, but you like that is a moment of, like, I was the author of her pain. I was the author of her plan. Mm-hmm. Like, surely, and I'm watching this unfold, and you're allowed to be authentic and be you. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, honestly. And if anybody did get offended, I'm not going to apologize. Seriously. No. Seriously.
And there's no need to apologize for that. If they got offended, they had no idea what you – here's what I say to people. If – people that are critical of you, or people that are critical of me, or any other coach, how many workouts did you go to watch this person?
None.
Zero. You went to none. You were never there at 5 a.m. You were never there at 7 p.m. Daily, constantly, you know, day after day after day. All you've done is you've got an opinion on what you've seen at the end. You were never there to see the work they put in.
Well, opinions are for the uneducated, right? So that's exactly right. And they're not educated in our pursuit. They don't understand. So, and that's the whole thing about keyboard warriors. Like, I mean, a lot of people sort of who understood sport and watched it and took great pleasure in watching them understood, because they felt it too. You've got to remember, I've seen people be more animated with gender reveal for their babies. Like, honestly, this is an Olympic gold medalist against the GOAT. Like, whatever.
Yeah, I'm with you, mate. What about you? When does this start back then? Like, have you given yourself a start day for getting back to work, or are you still on a break?
No, I'm still on a break. I'm actually up here at Noosa. Just away, like I had the boys up here, my boys up here for 4 days, and went back for 3 days and spent it there with the family. And then my wife's allowed me just to come up here for 4 days just to try and get some R&R. And then I'm going to start to think about what we're going to try and do for the upcoming season, about when to come back and so forth. I need time, and they need time. I haven't yet worked it out, no. But, you know, some said to me, Dean, I'd like to start back next week. I'll ask them why, and then I'll say, yeah, you can start back slowly. But if that's what you feel, then no problem. But I won't be there.
Yeah. Well, listen, mate, I've loved this. I think this has been awesome.
Well, I know you're trying to close this, Brett, but I've got to tell a story.
Tell it, mate. Come on.
Those guys, and I noticed that Bowley had a huge impact on people, like on the views. And I gave him a huge rap. But I went out with Bowley on the weekend, and Bowley and I had an unbelievable night. And I want to explain what happened, if that's okay.
Do it, mate.
So we went out to the most expensive restaurant in Brisbane, organised by a guy called Bevan Slattery, who's he's a tech entrepreneur. He's doing great things, right? Building cables around Australia into Asia and, data centres and so forth. And he took out the St. Peter's contingent of people. Maxi, one of the coaches at St. Peter's, who works alongside me. Bowley was St. Peter's. Our sports director, Sean Nodable, and then Tim Forrester, who was like a business developer for building, who's in Brisbane, is doing great things. And we went out, right, to this restaurant. And the restaurant is exclusive. And it's only 2 hours sitting, and then you've got to get out and the next group of people come in for 2 hours. But because Bevan's a bigwig, he organised us to stay there for 4 hours with only table there. We were having margaritas, rosé, shots of vodka, black caviar, oysters, this Wagyu steaks, caramel slices, red wine. Like, it was unbelievable. We're about a couple of hours into it, and Bowler gets up and goes, "Boys, girls, I need to go to the toilet." And he leaves his wallet and phone on the table, and he goes away. Anyway, we're drinking wines and vodkas, and we're having a great time. It was a hoot, right? And there's a whole new bunch of people have walked in because it's a new setting. It's an hour and 15 minutes have gone by, and Bowley's gone. So I've gone, "Something's not right. Someone called Bowley's phone." "No, his phone's here." So I've gone, "Oh," I go outside. I walked outside, went at the different bars to find Bowley. We went down to one of the toilets. "No, he's not there." We went to the manager. The manager was trying to find him, didn't know where he was, never saw him leave. So an hour and 30 minutes have gone by. I said, "This is enough." So we've got the chef, the head chef, the manager, and they've gone upstairs to where these toilets were, and there's this disabled toilet, and it's locked. And I said, "Can you open it?" I said, "We can't open it." I said, "Can you please open it? I think my friend's in there." They said, "Well, you need to go in. You need to take responsibility for somebody else." I said, "No problem." I've opened it, and there's Bowley with his pants down to his ankles sitting on the toilet, asleep. He's asleep. He's asleep. I've gone, "Bowley, Bowley." And he's popped his head up, and he's gone, "Dino." I said, "Bowley." He goes, "Oh, I fell asleep." I said, "You fell asleep? You're pooing on the toilet, mate." He goes, "Oh, I fell asleep." I said, "No, we're waiting for you." He goes, "How long has it been?" I said, "An hour and a half. An hour and a half. At the most exclusive restaurant. Like, people move. People move." So the great news about Bowley, if people heard him when he was speaking, he's non-perplexed. He's unfazed with stuff. So he's walked back down, and we've gone, "Bowley." And the steak is cold. And he's just walked down, started eating the steak, and he goes, "Oh, well, fell asleep on the toilet." And just cruising.
Oh, Bowley, mate. Pure gold.
He's the best, mate. He's the best. He's not going to live that one down. Sleeping in the toilet while defecating.
Oh, man, it's good to hear that he hasn't changed a lick.
No, he's the best.
Mate. What a legend. God, I want to get back down there. I got to tell you the truth. I mean, this might be a little bit of inside information here, but mate, I miss Australia. I miss it a lot,
Mate, let me tell you, we would love to have you. And I know that there is a lot of changes taking place, and there's someone of your caliber who understands speed and sprint work and has evolved more than a lot of the coaches there in Australia regarding that. And now has so much experience, mate, we would love you.
Yeah, mate, I would love to. I've been out here about 16 years now, and there hasn't been a time where I've felt homesick, where I've felt like I wanted to get back more than maybe during COVID. I don't know. Maybe at the start of COVID, I started to get really homesick and started to miss it a lot, and started to kind of get very nationalistic, you know, like I'm Australian. I've I'm an American. I'm a citizen. I voted in a couple of elections, but ultimately, you know, home is where the heart is, you know, kind of thing.
Walkie, you're going to have to get rid of this accent, mate. We're going to have to work on that, mate.
I've lost it.
Fair dinkum, true blue, you beauty, that sort of stuff. You've got to get back to that.
Yeah, it's coming back eventually. I'll get down to it.
I'll start that. I'll start that campaign for you.
Appreciate it. Listen, 32 in Brisbane was inspirational. Sydney was a big deal for me, mate. When we got the Sydney Olympics, that changed my life. Like it changed my mindset. And I kind of feel the same way professionally now with Brisbane. At some point I'll be back. I don't know when, but, you know, what do we got? 10 years or so to the Brisbane Olympics.
11 years.
I'll be back. I will be back at some point.
What would be great is, too, if any international swimmers there want to come down for a couple of training camps, please get in contact with me just to get the feel of Brisbane and, you know, work with some of the guys. It'd be fantastic. I think it'd be very good.
Are you happy where you're at, St. Peter's? You're going to be there?
Yeah, mate, fantastic. They're fantastic schools. Number one school in Australia. Number one club in Australia at the moment. And, you know, we're kicking goals. And, mate, they're very good. Like, they're phenomenal. They're phenomenal to deal with. You know, the managers, the college, you know, Sean Noggles, sports director, is the best in the world at it. You know, it's fantastic.
I thought Waverley College in Sydney was the number one school.
No, stop it. Honestly. Wave. No. You're joking me. Do your homework, Hawkey.
Waverley College, mate. That's where it's at.
No. Sorry for anybody at Waverley. No.
I love it, mate. Listen, I've loved this. This has been epic. Holy hell. This has been like double the length of any podcast I've ever done. So this is going to be cut into two parts, I think, mate.
Yeah, no problem, mate. Honestly, no. Hawkey, I know it's been a long time coming. I've sort of delayed, you know. I've had to get through a few things, you know. I think you wanted to get in contact with regard to the Shayna saga. I can't talk about the Shayna saga. There's still an ongoing procedures there and a case that's nearly done. So, mate, you've been an unbelievable supporter of me. A lot of people don't realise that you were constantly texting me prior to the Olympics and during the Olympics. You knew how to poke and prod me like Bowley and motivate me and keep me there and keep me in the game. Mate, I'll forever be grateful for that. But, mate, the way that you've done this podcast is phenomenal, mate. Like, we've spoken now for nearly 2 hours and 30 minutes, and it's just great. I could go for another 3 hours.
I love it, mate. I definitely want to come back at some point, you know, maybe before Paris. But this is so thrilling for me. You know, like I love this stuff. And I try not to plan too much. I try just to, for me, what I imagine is two guys just sitting in a bar and having a chat over a drink.
It is. It's exactly kind of what like I that. Feel like. I felt like that, you know.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, it's instant communication too, because I thought there'd be a delay. Phenomenal.
Yeah, no, this is good. I appreciate it, mate. You're a legend. I want nothing but the best for you, and I'm thrilled with your success. I think you're brilliant. I love everything you're doing. I'm a huge supporter. Mate, I couldn't be any more behind you than I am. So I want everything to come your way that you've earned and that you deserve. So good luck with everything, all right?
Appreciate it, Hawkey, and thank you for everybody that was listening. I hope that I made sense and you guys weren't bored. And Hawkey, you want to talk after backstage?
Yep, backstage. All right, take care, mate. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.